Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Macro Monthly Podcast Series here on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel with UBS Asset Management. On a monthly basis, we do look forward to hearing from top investment professionals from the UBS Asset Management multi-asset team joining us for this month's update to kick off the series for 2026. Glad to welcome back our speakers, Evan Brown, Portfolio Manager and Head of Multi-Asset Strategy, as well as Multi-Asset Specialist Fatou Kanté. With that, Fatou, Evan, thank you both for dropping by. Happy New Year. And Fatou, I will pass it over to you to lead this month's conversation with Evan. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. Happy New Year to you and all of our listeners. We have a number of exciting topics on the agenda today, including our latest macro views and how we're positioned in our portfolios. So we have a lot of ground to cover, so let's get started here. Evan, you just published that your January macro monthly called More Growth and Less Heat. Can you walk us through your thoughts on the economic outlook to start the year?
Sure. Thanks, Fatou. And yes, happy to kick off the year back on these podcasts. Yes, more growth, less heat. So on the growth side, we're seeing a reacceleration in growth after the government shutdown induced weakness in Q4. We're also just fiscal policy is turning from a headwind to a tailwind. Headwind in last year in the sense that, tariffs are a tax and we raise taxes on businesses and consumers with the tariff increase last year. But now we're getting the tailwind of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Disposable incomes are going to rise through tax rebates in the first few months of the year. So that, we've got some support from growth. We're also getting fiscal policy support from Germany, Japan. So it's a global story too. The less heat refers to inflation. And yeah, I mean, there's still some tariff related pass through of price increases in inflation, but outside of the tariffs, we're seeing a lot of downward pressure on inflation, whether it's housing costs, wages. We're seeing kind of China double down on export-led growth, so they're exporting this inflation to the world. And, you get this environment now where growth is picking up and inflation pressures are lessening, and the Fed's still with an easing bias, and that's a good environment for risk assets.
So currently the market is pricing in just over 2 rate cuts for all of 2026. From your view, is what's being priced in right now justified?
We think it's justified. We think, mentioned inflation, right? If inflation in our view is more likely to surprise to the downside than the upside over the coming months, then you could get Fed cuts coming, just for inflation reasons. Also the Fed, right, what's their dual mandate? It's price stability, so that's the inflation side, and it's full employment. Now, if it was GDP growth, then you'd say the Fed really shouldn't be easing because growth has come in really strong, continues to come in pretty strong, and we expect it to continue to be the case. But the labor market remains soft, and that's there's a lot of things going on there, and probably some element of AI leading some companies to slow down hiring and see what they can do with technology. But we have seen the unemployment rate rising over the last few months, and we'll be watching that. But if you don't get this turnaround in unemployment, then I think the Fed is still going to err on the side of caution and continue to ease. So actually at this point, I mean, you mentioned two rate cuts or so priced in for 2026, but there actually is not a full rate cut priced for the remainder of Powell's term, the next three meetings going through April. And I think the risks are such that he's much more likely to ease than not at least once. And so we think, you know, the bias is to the Fed doing more rather than less this year. And so think, the pricing right now is fair.
So kind of zooming out a bit to a more global lens. I think, you know, the start of the year has been eventful with the U.S.'s removal of the Venezuelan leader Maduro, to say the least. And I know you mentioned that you expect strong growth this year. So how is this impacting your thinking on the economy and markets and that outlook?
Yeah, and I think that's the question whenever we have any of these geopolitical events is, what does this actually mean for growth, for inflation, for earnings? And we don't see major changes coming as a result of this. Over time, yes, there's likely to be increased oil supply coming out of Venezuela, but that's going to take a lot of investment. That's going to take confidence in the governance in the area. And so, you know, the vast majority of the time when we have geopolitical events, the answer is to do nothing in terms of positioning, because it's just often not the case. Even if some event seems impactful, and it is impactful, to global citizenry, but it's not necessarily that impactful for growth, inflation, and earnings. So there's not much to do there. But what I will say is, yes, we have been getting these geopolitical events, and it feels like a little bit more frequently. And I think that speaks to the benefits of holding gold strategically in portfolios. So, you know, you're less reactive when an event happens. But as we saw after the event, you know, gold performed quite well and provides a little bit of a hedge for, you know, potential kind of these geopolitical events or increased interventionism playing out more frequently.
Great. And let's maybe switch gears here to talk about the team's asset class views. So I'll start off with the most common question we tend to get from investors at the start of every year, which is, you know, what's your outlook on stocks versus bonds in 2026?
So we do like both stocks and bonds, and the common link there is inflation coming down, but we like stocks more than bonds. Just think it continues to be a good economic environment. You know, bottom line is that historically, when you have earnings growing and no recession and a central bank that is, you know, an easing as opposed to a tightening bias, those are good environments for equities. And we see continued earnings growth, not just in the U.S., but we're seeing a real broadening out of earnings growth globally and across the cap structure here in the U.S. So government bonds we see as more of a hedge in case, you know, the labor market continues to worsen, and the Fed, as mentioned, still has plenty of room to ease. But we prefer stocks to bonds at the current time.
Okay, so you prefer stocks, but within equities, what are your preferred markets?
We have kept on with emerging markets, Japan and the U.S. Those are the areas where we're seeing the best earnings growth. Japan, there's kind of these reflationary dynamics under their new PM, Takaichi, but also continued corporate reform going on in the region. Also seeing that corporate reform and a boom in memory in Korea, and that's a big export there. And so that's helping our long emerging markets trade. And then within emerging markets, we like China tech. If you think about the U.S., right, the big question for all the mega cap tech companies is what's going to be the return on investment from all this CapEx? And what we're seeing in China is a lot less CapEx. They're not trying to build the absolute best model. They're trying to be more efficient with it. So their CapEx is running at about a fifth of the size of what we're seeing in the US. And so that bar for generating return is actually, the bar is lower in China. And so could see continued dynamics in China looking good, more applications and robotics, electric vehicles and the like. And so we like China tech. One area that we're underweight, we remain underweight is Europe. And this is related to China, actually. Mentioned China doubling down on export-led growth. And as they're moving up the value chain, they are competing with Germany and a lot of European exporters in the same areas and undercutting them on costs. And that's a tricky environment for a lot of European exporters. So we are seeing less of an inflection higher in earnings growth in Europe than we are seeing in some of these other regions.
And from your view, where do the opportunities lie right now within fixed income?
Yeah, so we like EM and equities. We like it in fixed income as well. EM debt in local currency terms. Our bias is that the Fed, as I said, can do more easing, and we think that'll keep a lid on the dollar, and investors will be looking in the rest of the world for higher interest rates and for EM carry, and that will put upward pressure on emerging market currencies. And so so that's an area of the world that we like. We're also underweight investment grade versus high yield. Part of this is just confidence in the economic outlook, but also it's that in IG, we're seeing this sharp increase in issuance on funding the AI CapEx cycle. And so there's a lot more supply of IG paper there, and we think that can contribute to some spread widening in IG, and that's something that you don't really see as much in high yield.
And kind of circling back here a little bit, I know you mentioned gold earlier as a good geopolitical hedge. And in December, you reintroduced an overweight to gold and gold miners. So can you talk a bit about that? And just generally speaking to what's your outlook on precious metals for the year?
Yeah, so I would, just emphasize that I would differentiate between our strategic asset allocation and our tactical asset allocation. So we've long had this overweight gold position in our strategic asset allocation. Makes sense as a long-term position. I mentioned the hedge against geopolitical shocks. We're also seeing just central banks and investors around the world gradually accumulating the metal and just diversifying their currency exposure. If you can consider gold a currency, also a hedge against independence of the Fed, risks on that front. But on TAA, we had been overweight for a good part of last year, but we removed this overweight in the fall because gold was becoming very volatile. It was trading in a way that we're seeing like big retail speculation. And for risk management considerations, we decided to take a step back. It was not trading quite in line with some of the typical fundamental drivers that we see. So we for risk management purposes, we pulled back a little bit. Since then, we've gotten more data showing central banks, actually increasing their purchases through that period. And the metal's been trading more closely in line with our models, linking it to the dollar and rates. So we became more comfortable re-engaging, and that's been playing out so far. In general, with the precious metals, and silver's been in the headlines, obviously had some big moves there, and we traded that long for a good part of last year, but for similar reasons, we had removed it. And you know, when you're in an asset and it's starting to do like up 10% one day and down 9%, the next day, you know, it's sometimes good to just take a little bit of a step back and kind of let the retail speculation play out a bit wait for it to kind of realign a little bit more with fundamentals. So, look, we think gold and silver can still do well over the course of this year. We have the strategic and tactical asset allocation position in gold, but we're holding back from silver as it undergoes this this very volatile environment.
Evan, thank you for sharing your insights with us today, and it's definitely clear listening to your thoughts here that, you know, we're well positioned to capitalize on the opportunities that 2026 holds. And with that, I want to thank everyone again for listening in and wishing everyone a happy new year.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.